Welcome to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 6 for the week of December 31st, 2008.
Podcast. I'm George Albor.
I'm Scott Chester.
And we are the co-creators of experiencepoints.blogspot.com, a site dedicated to serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture.
All right. And this episode will be coming out on the very last day of 2008. Therefore, we're going to do a year-end retrospective.
Yep. We're going to go ahead and cover some of our favorites of the year. So we're going to start off with our favorite games or gaming moments.
Yeah.
Then we're going to go to our favorite articles or
each of us is going to try to pick out one gaming article or series of articles that we read out on the internet this year, because it seems like the quote-unquote blogosphere really kind of came into its own, and there's a lot of good stuff that people were writing out there, so we're going to talk about our favorites.
And then lastly, we're going to wrap up with some news articles that or opinion pieces that we didn't cover earlier in the year, because we have a big old list of ideas for podcasts and things to talk about, and there are a lot of ones that we didn't cover that we thought were pretty interesting.
Quite make the cut, but they're probably entertaining anyway, so we'll probably just throw a couple in. And so first, we should preface this by saying our first segment is about our favorite games of the year, not best games of the year. We're not trying to like start a flame war over here. We have our shields and flame retardant outfits on right now.
We also understand we haven't played all of the games that came out this year. So
also true.
There's plenty that, you know, we haven't seen. So we're just going to be talking about our personal favorites, things that we really enjoyed. So
yeah. Okay. So do you want to start or should I do it?
Sure, I can start.
Okay.
So my favorite of the year, it was actually a pretty hard decision, and I had been thinking about this for a while because there have been a lot of, you know, top 10 lists and people reminding me about games.
It's that time of the year.
That were really, it's that time of the year. Have been reminding me about games that have come out that were really good. So I almost picked Braid, but I went for a game that came out more recently, and that is Left 4 Dead. And I didn't get to talk about Left 4 Dead in any written pieces. I haven't written anything for the site yet about the game, even though it is given me some of the most fun moments I can think of in my gaming history. It is possibly the best multiplayer game, except for maybe Bomberman, that I have ever played. And I got to play with some of my housemates and some of my good friends, and what they made is so much fun, and it's one of those games that is specifically for a multiplayer experience.
Now, did they release a beta before they released the entire game of it?
I don't know if they released...
Or did you go... Like, what I'm asking is, did you go into this completely fresh? Like, did you have no idea what you were getting into?
I knew that Valve was working on Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
And I was really into it. I bought into the hype 100%.
Of course. I mean, zombies, like, you know...
I'm a huge fan of zombies, first off.
I mean, George and I have in-depth discussions almost on a weekly basis of how to survive the zombie apocalypse. So, I mean, this really plays into it.
I have a t-shirt that lets people know that if a zombie apocalypse were to occur, they should follow me.
Yeah.
Because I could provide them, you know, the safety net.
Your shotgun.
With my shotgun, so I had read a lot about it, and I knew that Valve, you know, I had Team Fortress 2, and, you know, they're
well,
very
Valve
well known.
Is proven,
they, exactly,
you know?
They're so proven.
Yeah.
So I knew that they were probably going to make a really great game. And I also had read that they were planning on making a game that was specifically a multiplayer experience that was not just, you know, a first-person shooter type of game. It wasn't just, you know, Team Fortress 2 was great and all, but it's still team-based, you know, player large teams versus other large teams. The idea of playing a four-player co-op game specifically designed for that purpose was very intriguing to me. And it really followed through. There was just, it's just amazing game.
And you're playing it on the PC.
I'm playing it on the PC, and right now, unfortunately, my PC is on the fritz, so I haven't been able to play Left 4 Dead in a while. I know, it's so sad.
People are getting eaten by zombies because of your PC.
I know.
You can't help them.
There are certain things about the game that I want to talk about real quick that I liked a lot. One of them is something that I know some developers have done, but I personally haven't seen, and that is an optional director's commentary as you play through one of the levels.
That's really cool.
So Valve put in director's commentary for the first level of Left 4 Dead. Uh-huh. And I went through there, and it's up to you which ones you want to hear and which ones you want to listen to. Mm-hmm. And they talked about what went into this part of design. They mm-hmm. talked about each of the character designs and showed some early models. Mm-hmm. They talked about lighting effects and the specialized zombies and how they came across that. They talked about their the intensive playtesting that Valve is known for. And it was just, it was so interesting to be able to see from the developer's point of view the process by which they created this game.
Yeah.
And how the game that I play through has all of these important touches that I haven't even realized. They talked about...
Well, maybe you intuitively realize them. You yeah. subconsciously realize all the care that they put in, but it's nice being able to consciously take a look at that and look at why this game is so good.
Yeah, it was really... It was very cool. And, you know, they talked about some things about lighting and stuff that aren't things that I know very much about. And so to have people who were, you know, it was their job to work on that, talk to me about it, was very cool. And I think that's something that a lot of games should do. I would love to see that in most games.
I think sometimes there's a worry that if people do that, it takes away some of the mystery, some of the mystique of the magic of the game. You know, like uh-huh. if you see all the pieces, it might not be as much of an impact. It might not be as seamless. But I think you're making a good case for why it could even heighten your appreciation.
Yeah, it definitely heightens yeah. my appreciation. And again, it's optional. You don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. I did it after I played through all of that campaign, so I had already experienced the game and knew that I liked it. And then when I saw them talking about it, it was just kind of like, you know, if you have a favorite movie and there's a really good director's commentary, mm-hmm. I see no reason why it can't be incorporated into games. I don't imagine it's that difficult.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. So you're going to keep at it once your PCs get fixed. I'm
definitely going to keep at it. And I mean,
and they're probably going to release new levels and stuff.
I'm sure. You know, and that's why it's one of the things that I'm so excited about is I know that Valve's going to come back to this game and add content.
Yeah.
And so even the games that I really like this year, this is one that I know I'll be playing for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it just has all those that potential for being a game that I can come back to, even in playing the levels that already exist and have a really good time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's really cool. All right, so my turn?
Yeah, go for it.
So, despite what people may think, I'm not going to choose Little Big Planet for this game. It's close. It's a very, very close second. But my favorite game of the year was World of Goo.
Ooh.
Yeah, World of Goo. World of Goo came out of nowhere. So I had never even played Tower of Goo. That was their proof of concept game that 2D Boy made. And then they extrapolated the game into this entire world where you have to make bridges and towers mm-hmm. and so forth. And I heard about the game. I believe I heard about it from Michael Abbott. I think he just posted something up really quickly on his, maybe he was, it might have even been over Twitter. He was saying, "Oh man, I'm really liking this World of Goo game. Uh-huh. If you're on WiiWare, you should get it." And so I was like, "Oh, what is this?" So I went on WiiWare and I was like, "Oh, okay, you know, $15. Michael seems like a pretty good guy. Yeah. I respect his opinion. Let's do it. Best $15 I've ever spent." Uh-huh, I mean, yeah. this game was charming and subversive and inventive from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. And I played the complete game over the Wii.
Did you play in one sitting? Did you just plow through it? Or?
I didn't plow through it because at certain points... some of the levels got so crazy, so difficult, that I needed a break from it. Yeah. For those of you who haven't played World of Goo, it's basically a puzzle game where you have these little goo balls that connect to each other, and the balls form nodes, and they connect to each other via strands, and so you can build structures out of them, like ladders and bridges and mm-hmm. so forth, and it all conforms to a physics engine that the game designers have implemented. So if you're ladder is heavy on one side, it'll start lilting and eventually collapse on itself. So you really need to be careful about how you're building things, and different goo balls have different kinds of
properties
that can help you out. You know, there's explosive ones, there's stretchy ones, there's reusable ones. Mm-hmm. They just took a really simple concept and they applied it in a lot of very inventive ways, which I really like. I really like games that are simple to grasp, but extremely complex once you start getting into them.
Uh-huh. Were you surprised that your favorite game came on the Wii and was like an independent? when I think about it, it's a pretty simple game. It doesn't have, you know, a grand storyline. It doesn't have amazing, stellar 3D graphics. Well, yeah. I'm just wondering if you're surprised that one of your favorite games is a game that was not a major blockbuster.
I am surprised because I really thought that Little Big Planet would be my would be my number one game, which, like I said, it almost was. I mean, you know, if I could pick two, I would do that. But I think World of Goo edged it out because it was created mainly by two guys, and they were at one time employees at Electronic Arts. Mm-hmm. And so this game is kind of a metaphor for their experience at a huge corporate environment. Hmm. Like the story involves the goo balls interacting with this huge corporate entity that's trying to control them and process them into a product.
Right.
And eventually this corporation controls the entire world, digitizes it, and then sells it back to people.
So how much do you think your appreciation of the game relies on that underlying story?
I don't know. It's a hard thing to... Because usually I'm very, very purist in terms of gameplay. Like, I don't really mind when a game doesn't have a lot of story, because if it has a rock-solid gameplay mechanic, that's fine with me.
Like, yeah, like that's something why I'm like, surprised.
That's something like Mario Kart, you know? Like, I don't care. Mario Kart doesn't have any story, but I think it's rock solid and it's racing, so that's why I like it. Uh-huh. Or Little Big Planet. Little Big Planet barely has a story, but I really like the way that they use their tools. But the thing is, World of Goo has the best of both worlds. I mean, it has something... Every, you know, if you create a structure in World of Goo, it will react to the world's physics in exactly the way you think it will. Mm-hmm. If you think something's going to fall that way, it most likely will.
It's really funny because some of my most fun moments playing World of Goo have been those moments where you go, uh-oh, this is not sound. Yeah. This is not structurally sound. And then it starts to lean one way and you start panicking and just,
And you start to look at it like an engineering. You're like, okay, so if I put a counterweight on this end of the tower, then it will prevent it from leaning in this direction. But that means I also need to prop up the very top of the tower, you know?
Yeah. I mean, similar to the way Portal created a sensation of people thinking in portals, this made me kind of quote-unquote thinking in goo structures.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I really liked it. And then I like the story because it's a commentary on the culture around games. Mm-hmm. You know, this was two guys that are very involved in the art and the industry of making games. And so I think that it's good when people can integrate that into the games that they make, because it gives us a little bit of an idea of what the people are like behind the games we create and what the industry is like behind the games we create too.
Yeah.
You know, with the amount of resources that these guys had at their disposal, Kyle Gabler and Ron Carmel, those are the two guys. With the amount of resources that these guys had, they just created something excellent. Mm-hmm. And it's multi-platform. You can play it on PC, Mac, Linux, I believe.
Yeah.
WiiWare, no DRM protection, which is good and bad. I mean,
it people have some troubles.
Yeah. Well, people have been pirating it, distributing it illegally. I mean, there's an argument that says that, you know, regardless of whether you put DRM on it or not, people will pirate it. And if people are gonna play it, you know, it's better that they play it rather than just not play it.
Yeah, I mean, my sister's... I went home for the holidays this weekend, and my sister's boyfriend's son, he pirated World of Goo.
Yeah.
And I got on his case for it. I'm like, this is one of the greatest games.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You need to go and pay for it. And he said he probably would, but I don't believe
he probably won't. No. I mean, and the thing is that it's you're not paying your money to a corporate entity here.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to these guys and their small team of artists that help them out to translate it to the Wii. You know, I think that when I went home for the holidays, my parents had bought a Wii, which I'll be writing about pretty soon. Yeah. And I bought World of Goo for them.
Yeah.
Because it's like, sure, I'll spend another $15 to support these guys. I want to see their next game, too.
Yeah.
I want them to be able to go on with this.
Do you think that the game changed your view or other people's views on the success or failures of independent games and whether or not to give them, you know, more credibility and money even?
I mean, I think I hope that in concert with games like Pixel Junk Eden, Braid, Audio Surf, Echo Chrome, those types of smaller downloadable games that aren't just fluff. You know, Pixel Junk Eden would be on my list too of my favorite games of the year if we were to expand the list further. And I think that it's cool that we're talking about these downloadable games. You know, I think that the success and the quality of them really speaks to something new, something that we'll really see take off in 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I love World of Goo. I mean, and the other thing, you can play it cooperatively. Me, my brother, and my dad played through the first chapter of it at home, and it was great because you start arguing with each other about who has to get. Yeah. Exactly. And you're like, okay, well, once I solidify this side of the bridge, you have to be ready, like, because it will start falling, and you'll have to start building. Like,
I consider myself a pretty good buttresser. Yeah, if that's the proper
term. Anyway, that, like I said, my favorite game of the year, and I hope that their next game is equally as enjoyable.
I think it's pretty cool that our two favorites are pretty different.
Yeah, like, yeah, and a little bit out of the ordinary, you know, like, and it's kind of cool because it's not really a commentary on how bad things were, because I could have easily seen you picking Fable 2, mm-hmm. And like I said, I could have easily picked Pixel Junk or Little Big Planet, but yeah, and it's not a slight against those games.
Yeah, not at all.
You know, I think it was just a pretty good year for a variety of games that are coming out.
Definitely.
So yeah, so pick up World of Goo and pick up Left 4 Dead. You know, both really good games to play together, and you know, from studios that, in my mind, have a lot of cred.
Absolutely, you know? you could really trust, I think, both of those creators.
Yeah, they're, you know, those are gamers that are working there. You know?
I agree.
Not a lot of marketing fluff behind it.
So why don't you go ahead and start the next
book? Okay. So the other thing that we wanted to talk about as a year-end wrap-up was our favorite game writing that we read this year. And both of us think that the internet and, you know, our little community in the blogosphere has really taken off over the past 12 months, 18 months maybe. So we wanted to take a look back at 2008 and just pick some of our favorite articles that we read from some of the blogs and some of the news outlets that we read. So go ahead, you can do yours first.
Sure. So my pick, I ended up reading a lot, and I know I'm forgetting some people, so forgive me if, you know, I really like your
Our Google works. Reader it's just nuts. A monstrosity of
I've started to schedule in times in the week where I start reading other people's posts, because people are really pumping out some really good material.
Yeah.
So my pick was actually a series of posts by various different people, and tons of different bloggers participated. Mm-hmm. And what this really was a conversation about innovation and review process. And so this, I don't know who started it, but I started reading it when Engai Kroll was responding to Lee and Alexander's response. Mm-hmm. Engai Kroll from Level Up from USA Today?
Newsweek.
And then Lee Alexander from Sexy Video Game Land. And the issue was about whether or not we can give games that take risks and do certain things well the good review scores, even though other aspects of the game cripple the overall experience.
Yeah, so like giving a game the benefit of the doubt if it goes out on a limb to try to do something.
And I think this year has some titles that have been pretty interesting in those regards. So one that popped up
What started this whole thing?
You know, I think it was
Mirror's Edge.
I actually think it was Silent Hill.
Oh.
So Lee Alexander had written one about essentially defending Silent Hill, and it was wondering whether or not
we can reward games that are flawed, but
that are flawed, but you know, have very innovative values. And then Mirror's Edge came out, and Mirror's Edge just fits perfectly.
Yeah.
And I think you see it in a lot of reviews, and the way that people are talking about this game is the core mechanic, the simulation of fluid movement is superb in Mirror's Edge.
Yeah.
But the game is fundamentally flawed with other parts, be it level design, art design, combat in my opinion, at least, are way down this game to a great deal and muck up the thing that it works so well in the game.
Well, it also mucks up a game that people seemingly want to like.
Yeah, and people do, and you can tell people are really excited about this being a franchise that is added onto. Mm-hmm. If we can see a sequel, or if we can see this mechanic in another environment, it could work really well. People know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely sympathize with people who want to reward Mirror's Edge, mm-hmm. because I think that it is important. We need to be able to reward innovation even in games that are bogged down. And I'm not fully decided on where I fall on that subject. I do believe that there's a place for reviews and there's a place for critiques and people who are looking for reviews in order to help them decide what game to buy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just need a score and need to know whether or not that game is going to be satisfying.
Yeah, they got to know if it's going to be worth their money, and especially tough times now. You know, you don't want to spend your money on an idea.
Exactly. You
know, it's hard.
At the same time, I'm really glad I got Mirror's Edge. I'm really glad I played through the entire game because it was something new, it was something unique, and it almost felt like I was getting a glimpse into the future of this type of gameplay.
I'm really looking forward to playing it because just of what you said, like, I can see them, even though the combat didn't work out, I could see them integrating the kind of technology they used in a upcoming game that even uses guns or something.
Yeah.
Have that kind of sense of body.
Yeah.
You know, I think it just, it has a lot of potential for the future.
And so I really enjoyed the blog conversation that was going on between, especially Lee Alexander's writing and Guy Kroll's, and I think some other notable people participated, maybe Stephen Totello.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just very interesting seeing different takes on it, and people disagree, and you know, people are trying to understand what it means to review a game, and you're getting Sean Elliott's current blog contribution. That's a discussion between reviewers talking about it, and I think Mirror's Edge in particular really got people thinking about what it means to reward innovation and to play a game in a way to appreciate different aspects of that game. So I feel like we're no longer just playing games with the idea of, is this game fun?
Yeah.
Although if you play with that idea in mind, you know, by all means, that's perfectly fine. But the idea of going into a game and starting to wonder, what makes this game fun? What aspects of these games are flawed?
Mm-hmm.
And what is the way, what are the games that we're playing now showing us about the games that we want to play in the future?
Yeah. And, you know, it's just a different way to play a game. And you can still play it in addition to playing it as if I'm going to answer the question, is this fun? You know, it's just another layer to add. And so I think my favorite article is actually a set of articles that is tangentially related to that point you bring up about are games fun. And it's Mitch Kropata's A New Taxonomy of Gamers, came out all the way back in January of 2008. And he lays out a new way of defining what kinds of gamers enjoy what kinds of games, which is similar to what you were just talking about why we might enjoy games and what aspects what would make us enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically he says that the old dichotomy of casual and hardcore is pretty much useless now, especially in this current diversified way that we play video games. You know, someone who plays The Sims and only The Sims can still be super hardcore about The Sims.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's not to say they're not a hardcore gamer because they don't play Gears of War 2 or something.
Right.
And so he made a few new categories in which to explain the way people play games. The big ones are a tourist. If you're a game tourist, you like to kind of sample what a game has to offer, see the big sights of it. You're not so wrapped up in achieving the high gamer scores or even finishing the game necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Like a tourist can easily play some game like Okami for 5 to 10 hours, see what that game is all about, and then be fine just leaving it because they've had that experience. Then you have a person that could be referred to as a completionist who wants to really complete the entire game, see it from beginning to end, so that they can make a good judgment on how they liked it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third would be a perfectionist, a person who really wants to, as I put it, who really wants to beat the game.
Yeah, hone their skills.
Yeah, I mean, a perfectionist is the person that loads up Smash Brothers into the training mode and checks out the frames of the kick. So they know how many frames they have before they have to do their attack.
Yeah.
You know, a perfectionist is the person that wants to get every single achievement on Team Fortress 2. Even the ridiculous ones about, you know, shooting at the exact same time and deflecting off someone else to kill someone else. You know, like, that's a perfectionist who wants to just really take apart the game, and that's what they like about it. And I think that's really cool because you can apply those labels to yourself and to different games.
Yeah, I really like these article posts.
Yeah.
I always kind of saw myself as a video game explorer.
Yeah.
And so when he came out with the tourist label, I completely, you know, I connected with that, with that label. I, of course, have other tendencies, and I really like that he, you know, you put in space for having people fit different aspects of these things.
Yeah.
And it's really useful because, for example, one of my housemates, Steven, he's a different type of gamer. I think he's more the perfectionist type.
Yeah.
And so when I'm trying to show him a game that I think is cool and he doesn't really pick up on it, or even the way that he plays World of Warcraft with me is different than the way I play World of Warcraft with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually very helpful in terms of our relationship to understand how he approaches games and how I approach games and how they're different.
Yeah.
And I think that his taxonomy is really useful, and I hope people do pick up on it. Even if they don't use those words, I hope people start using those same ideas
when trying to understand. Get rid of the dichotomy versus you know, you're a gamer or you're not a gamer.
Yeah, or hardcore or casual.
Exactly. You know? It's like people play games in different ways, and even someone who's generally a tourist could get into one game, and in that game could be a perfectionist.
And it's also helpful for not just communicating with other gamers, but, you know, helping people figure out what type of games they want to play. Like, there's some people in my office who want to pick up gaming, and I can already sort of feel out what types of games that they would be interested in based upon his taxonomy. And then also it's helpful to read games using that taxonomy, right? The games that are going to be most successful are probably going to be the games that can satisfy all three types of gamers.
Yeah, definitely. So anyway, I just thought that was a really good article, and it goes along with your article that you, your exchange of articles that you picked out too. You know, there's a lot of good writing out there, and it's humanly impossible to keep up with it all, which is why I let Google do it for me.
Yeah.
So if we didn't, you know, if we haven't been commenting on your blog, it doesn't mean we're not reading it. We're just backed up a little bit.
Or let us know also. Feel free to send us an email or comment.
Hey, I wrote personal picks. You know, exactly. And so we have a couple minutes before we want to wrap things up. So you want to go over a couple of the almost hits of the news podcast?
So, you know, for a while we were doing various...
We kind of go through the week and take a look at the big news stories, and some of them are quirky news stories too, and write it down in a big spreadsheet of things.
Yeah, we've got an Excel sheet essentially that has all of the stories that are ideas that we might want to talk about.
Yeah.
And me and Scott talk about quite a few of them just between ourselves. Yeah,
they never see the light of day.
So we're going to pick some ones that we thought were pretty funny.
I like this one.
Yeah, so the first one is buy a purse and try out a DS. So this was an article about, I don't know who was doing it, but it was essentially a
high-end fashion.
Like Gucci Guitar or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
One of those like really fancy purse makers.
Yeah.
You could rent a purse. And when you rented this purse, inside the purse came Nintendo DS and I think Nintendogs.
Yeah.
So that you could carry around your virtual chihuahua in your really ritzy bag.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
We just thought that was just a weird story. Why?
It's just really crazy because I think that even now you're starting to see people who... industries that don't traditionally merge well with video games trying to do so because they see money in it. And you know, Nintendo's making a killing, and so, you know, a bag company decides to give out Nintendo DSs when you're renting one.
Yeah.
I don't think the market's there. I don't think that the type of woman or man who wants to rent a really fancy purse for a day is also loves the idea of being able to play Nintendogs.
Who knows? Maybe they do. That's the thing. Like, people, the taxonomy's getting murkier, so we don't know.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things that we initially wanted to talk about. It was about fanboys. There was a fanboy war on Metacritic where Xbox 360 fanboys were downmodding PS3 and vice versa.
We almost talked about that article several times because they kept on adding to it.
Exactly. This is an ongoing war. And related to that, the big announcement that Final Fantasy 13 would also be on 360. And, you know, some people calling it, like, a betrayal or something like that.
Yeah, the idea of fanboys is a really interesting one, and I'm sure that we're going to talk about it one of these days.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about it.
But the Metacritic one was particularly interesting because you got people giving negative reviews to games that haven't even come out yet. So Gears of War 2, for example, was being given negative reviews
and then in retaliation, they would downmod Little Big Planet.
Exactly. You know? And so you started getting, like, these console-exclusive games... with low scores relative to critic scores because a lot of the gamers themselves were biased, at least the ones who went and decided to vote several times.
Exactly.
It's just really funny. And Metacritic, you know, who is trying to retain the sense of legitimacy in the gamer world, you know, is a little paranoid about it.
They had to start implementing some kind of screening system. People have to make an account to do it. You know, we could all see this coming. It just finally happened.
Yeah, I thought that was a very funny and interesting story.
Yeah.
Especially because the people who are hurt are people who, you know, are trying to decide what game to buy this year.
Exactly. You know. Or the people who are making the games, and all of a sudden their producers are like, how come your game is being is being panned? And it's like, no, it's the fanboys. Don't fire me.
It's weird because it's so illogical to me. But
it's a bigger discussion. I have a lot of thoughts on fanboys. We'll have to talk about it. All right, so like one or two more throwaways before we wrap it up.
Yeah.
Square Enix making a game controlled by your brain.
Yeah, that was the tech post on Gamasutra a long time ago. And that was just the idea of controlling a video game with your brain is something that just goes back to, you know, fantasies when you were a little boy in like Nintendo games. Yeah. and it's really not that appealing to me anymore.
I mean, I don't want Square in my brain. Yeah. I don't want to have to be getting potions in my head.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. I think that one is useful. The class action lawsuit.
Oh, yeah,
This was an article that was on Game Politics regarding a class action lawsuit being brought against Microsoft for the Red Rings of Death.
I mean, I am surprised that this hasn't been a bigger story of the year, because it seems like gamers are now just kind of complacent. Like, yeah, my Xbox will one day break and I'll send it back.
I mean, I recognize that that will happen to me one day and I'll send it back.
You've come to terms with it.
I mean, at one time I got 3 red rings and I freaked out, turned it off and it was fine. You know, but I know a lot of people who've had to send it in twice, 3 times even.
It's pretty ridiculous. And I, you know, it's
What weirds me out is that they're sending in the ones that they got replaced about a year ago.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to say that we're going to refurbish an Xbox or give you a new console, I'm just very surprised that it's not fixed, and I don't think it's something that consumers would take lightly if it were in any other industry. If this were your car, for example, and they give you a new Lexus, and then the brakes
fail 6 months later,
it's just really weird.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just disheartening to have shoddy equipment out there, especially on the most on one of the most popular consoles out there.
Yeah.
Okay, one more throwaway one: Fable 2, officially a stoner game.
Yeah.
Yay or nay? I've never
I haven't
played Fable 2, so
you know, I
think have you smoked the wacky tobacco and played some Fable?
I personally have not. I could see Fable 2. Okay, Fable 2 allows you to fart so long that you shit your pants. That is a stoner moment if I've ever seen one. I mean, you could kick chickens. Oh yeah, it's a stoner game.
It's a stoner game.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Peter Molyneux was high making this game.
He's probably high right now.
He's probably high right now. Lionhead Studio? I mean, come on. The whole place is just a den of iniquity.
Well, maybe someday we'll have to do the inebriated podcast in tribute to stoner games.
Yeah, listeners will love that.
All right. Well, I think we should wrap it up at this point. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being with us for the entire year. Happy New Year, because this will be coming out right on New Year's Eve. And of course, as always, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your comments. We want to hear your emails.
If you want to send us an email, feel free to do so. We're at experiencepoints@gmail.com. And you can also leave your comments. Thank you all for participating and listening for this first year of ours.
Yeah, even first like quarter year. We've only been at this for a little while, and you know, we just keep on building a community around it. We really appreciate all the folks who hang out, who make comments, who make the emails, and who listen every time.
Yeah, and 2009 looks like it'll be a pretty good year for video games, and I think it'll be a pretty good year for us.
I'm excited.
I'm very excited to keep it coming.
All right, so until next time, Happy New Year, and have fun.
Yep, have fun. Bye-bye. Every time we